Graphi Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 65th Berlin International Film Festival. Today we're talking about the film screening in the panorama section. It's 600 Miles by Gabriel Ripstein, who's here with me. Gabriel, so as this is your first feature film, and it's about a very tricky topic, so have you always wanted to do a film about this, or it just happened?
I think that more than the topic, what was interesting, or what this need that was inside of me of telling this story came from characters. I wanted to tell a story of two characters, two very opposite men who are forced to interact in a dramatic situation, and I wanted to explore what happened to the characters when they're stuck together in a car that's driving for 10 miles, for 10 hours, and what type of what type of relationship, being a bizarre one, could be created from that. Obviously, the topic of gun trafficking between Mexico and the United States is interesting to me, and one of the reasons why I wanted to explore it is the fact that I hadn't seen it in film before. Several films, Mexican films, have talked about drug dealing and illegal immigration, which has to do with of the relationship between two countries. But I hadn't seen the topic of guns being talked about, and for me, that's sort of the parallel or the mirror image of drug dealing. I made a very conscious decision not to talk about drugs, because again, I think other people have spoken very eloquently about them. I did want to explore that particular part of the world, which is the border between Mexico and the United States, at a particular time, which is the time of the Fast and Furious operation set forth by the ATF. And I wanted to use all of that as an excuse to force characters into complicated situations.
How realistic are the sequences at the gun shop?
Completely realistic. I mean, the gun shops are actual gun shops, and the gun sellers are actual gun sellers. I lived in the United States for a long time, and I was always intrigued by how easy it is in the United States to purchase heavy armament. No, any U.S. citizen with a license, a driver's license, and no criminal record can buy M16s or AR-15s or weapons that should belong exclusively to the military, yet people buy them with a voracious appetite and build arsenals in their homes. And the United States is a country that firmly believes in the right to bear arms. It's their Second Amendment of the Constitution. So it's a country that really has a gun culture. And for me, this in particular, this zone of the border, where there is a huge supply of firearms, and you just cross a little bit south and there's a huge demand by these criminal organizations, it's a very perverse combination, no? And obviously the thousands and thousands of deaths that are reported in Mexico because of the drug war, the question that I always ask is, where do these bullets come from? Where do these guns come from? Most of them come from the United States. So it's a very complex relationship between two countries around a very touchy subject.
And what's your personal opinion on it?
I think, I want to make it very clear that my personal opinion, I made a very conscious effort to not transmit it in the film, meaning I didn't want to point a finger and say, the United States are evil because they sell guns. No. Mexican drug organizations are also evil because they buy those guns and they shoot them. So I made a very conscious effort to not point fingers or have this label. No, my personal opinion is that it's very, very dangerous, no, to have that irrestrict access to weapons that have no sense in being in anyone's homes. And I tell this, I talk about this from a standpoint where I grew up around guns, because my grandfather was a hunter and my father also was exposed to them, and Luis Buñuel came to my house and he was a very avid shooter. So I'm not scared of guns per se. I'm just scared of the fact that people have that level of weaponry when it's completely unnecessary, because it doesn't serve a sport, it's not for hunting, and it's not for personal defense. You don't need an M16 to defend your house.
How did you get Tim Roth involved?
Tim Roth comes to the project via Michel Franco, one of the producers. Michel and Tim have a relationship that goes back a couple of years when Michel did a film which is After Lucia. That film won Certain Regard, won the best film at Certain Regard. Tim Roth was the president of the jury. They become friends and start a conversation about working together, and that conversation translated into two films that we shot with him. First was 600 Miles, which I directed and Michel produced, and then Michel directed a film with him and I produced. That's a film that we shot also last year in Los Angeles. So it's been a very fruitful collaboration. Tim is a great ally, and it was fortunate that he was available, because there was this play that he was doing and that he was going to do, but he and Michel were having drinks. Michel asked him, how's the play going? He said, you didn't know this actor punched the director, so the play is cancelled. Really? So he said, why don't you read the script? We're just casting for my project. He read it. He said, this is good, I'll do it. So it was this very sort of fortunate series of circumstances that brought Tim into the script. He's been involved heavily, both in the film that Michel directed as well as mine. He's, again, a very... I would even call him a little bit of a member of this film family, you know, that we have. You know? So he's an incredible collaborator. Yeah.
I had the feeling when I watched the film that the two young actors, despite being young, and that they looked very mature and professionally prepared on the roles they were playing. So can you tell me something more about how you work with them and how you normally work with actors?
Yes, both young actors in the film, Christian Ferrer and Harrison Thomas, are incredibly professional, and they prepared heavily for their roles. Harrison is a method actor, so the preparation that he did was exhaustive. He had a binder full of notes where he understood everything about the character, and we discussed it at length. When he was on set in character, he really was in character, and he was a bit intimidating even. Well, he got out of character, and he's the sweetest young man. And the same went with Christian. Christian is an actor that I always had in mind while I was writing the role. He has that vulnerability and that youth and naivete that I wanted to transmit into the character, and we discussed heavily who this character was and who all of those elements that made him stand out in that world where he operates, where he lives, no? How he's so ill-fitted to be doing what he's doing and to be working in that organization, no? He's a man who is naive, who has this ambition, but he lacks the capacity to see the consequences of what he's doing. Plus, he's discovering his sexual identity, which in that particular world is... the way that he is completely adverse. No, it's all of these elements make him stand out in a bad way. You know, so it was a process of heavy conversation with both actors. We did not rehearse. No, we didn't do rehearsals. And it was interesting to see them together because, and the same happened with Tim, because there was a language barrier. Tim and Harrison don't speak Spanish. Christian speaks very little English. So even outside of the scene, trying to get them to communicate was tricky. And it was interesting, and we incorporated that into the story. Meaning, there's many times when Tim's character doesn't understand what the hell the kid is saying, and he asks like, "What?" And he has to say it again and again. And that I suddenly start to sense that it adds to the tension. No, at some point we even played with the idea that maybe Tim speaks Spanish perfectly. No, his character, but he's always fucking with this kid, no? He's always manipulating. We eventually realize that he's been lying all along, no? It's this instinct of survival, this necessity of survival, no? Where you use whatever you can. In the case of Tim, being the shark that he is, that character, he talks and talks and talks and talks and looks for that opening inside of this character, no? Because he wants to survive.
That leads me to the question I was thinking, like, when did you decide and why did you decide to structure the film like that, with the ending sort of making you reevaluating all the things you have seen and reinterpret everything? Especially you have evaluated Tim Roth's character in a way, and then you realize that he's really, let's say, manipulating also.
I think, again, a theme of this film is survival, and I think people will do whatever they have to survive. They will betray, they will lie, they will kill many times, no? And this is a character that, when it's necessary, I mean, he is a trained federal agent. He knows how to shoot a gun, and we see that eventually in the film. So the decision is of when I reveal that information or not. It's to fuck a little bit with the audience, I guess. That's the intention. I mean, when do you give that information? When it's necessary. Meaning, the story is ended. The story ends when there is, at least in my read of the film, which I don't assume that it's the only one, my story ends when the balance is restored. Meaning, this kid saved Tim Roth's life at some point. And vice versa, that Tim Roth's character saves this kid's life. Balance is restored. However, that relationship between the two of them is over. It would be naive. It would be, it would be like in movies to say, they were going to become friends. No. Why would? No. He jumps in the middle of nowhere, left to his own resources. No? And now I'm revealing the end, so don't know. But you guys have seen it, I hope. No. So. It's. I think I tried.
That's what I really loved about it. I want to be clear about that. I was very happy that I didn't have what I thought. I'm okay. We're going there. Yeah, yeah. I thought I have to say. I have to admit. I was thinking about it. Okay. Now I was sort of getting a little bit distracting in the end because okay now. He's sage, okay, now he's Tim Roth's character, he's becoming his new reference point in life, you know, and his father figure, exactly. So, yeah, it would have been good as well, but not really.
I try to be coherent and responsible in a way to the story that I was telling and how I was telling it. If there was, and Michelle and I always have this as a creative collaborating team, the bullshit meter. And when I'm going into the bullshit area, he raises his hand, and vice versa. When he's going, and something that we always try to avoid in this film is it's starting to film like a film, no? This happens in movies. And that's what we didn't want to happen because, again, there's a coherence. If you're portraying a story with a search for realism without glamorizing or going into cliches or archetypes, you have to be coherent towards the end. It might not be the most film satisfying ending ever, no, in that people are used, or some people expect very closed endings and clarity and absolute control of the destiny of the characters. We wanted to avoid that completely, no? And that, I think, also has to do with how some characters are introduced or taken out of a story. You start the film with a character that you think is your protagonist, you change protagonist again, then you lose a character that is the detonator of a lot of the things that are happening, and you never see him again, because in real life, that's what would happen. No, that American kid, we would never see him again.
Thank you, Gabriel Lipstein, director of 600 Miles, for being here with us. And this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 65th Berlin International Film Festival for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.